And Daf Chavav Omer Aleph on the second line, Lemachar. So let's just review because we're really mamish in the middle of a sugya. We have a karpaf, and if all things were equal, there would be certainly an isur of tiltal in this karpaf. However, the karpaf is situated in front of some sort of beautiful mansion. And in the middle of this karpaf, we have a certain gazebo, we called it, which is used by the people in the palace in order to put their different kalim and so forth and so on. That's called hukaf lidira. Now, what is this gazebo called? I've been sort of breaking my teeth on this Aramaic word. It's called an ab. Varnica, and if you could help me remember that, a varnica, which is a kind of a roofed area, almost like a tent. I have a beautiful picture of it here in the Masifta. And these kings and princes that lived in the palaces used to go out there in the middle of this orchard, which is a karpav. And they would put all their items there, they would take their clothes and maybe if they wanted to get comfortable, take off their clothes and put it there, get a little shade there. There were different kinds of utensils or walking sticks, that they would use to walk through the beautiful orchard. And they would put this all inside the Avarnica. Now, the Gemara presented a major machlokas. The first shita was Rav Huna bar Chinina, and when the Reish Galus approached him and said, "Mari V'raibi, our great master Rav Huna, can you solve this problem for us so that on Shabbos we'll be able to be metaltel from the mansion into this abarnica?" And Rav Huna came up with a solution, and he gathered together a bunch of reeds, and he used them one after the other without empty space of three tefachim between them, so that he had lavud, and he basically set up a little pathway from the mansion into this abarnica, such that you were going through a separate rishus hayochid, and not only that, it goes even deeper than that. Why? Because since he, again, just to quote the Gemara's language, Ovad Kana Kana Pachas Mishlosha, when he made this little, I don't know what you call it, a little shvil, how do you call it in English, a little pathway, right? He made this little pathway from the entranceway of the exit from the mansion all the way up to the Abarnica. So as a result, he said that we now have an area that is no longer this orchard is no longer the size of Beis HaSayim of a Karpaf, because this whole area, including the pathway and the Abarnak itself, is now a separate Rishus. And it now diminishes the Beis HaSayim, and now you have no problem carrying anywhere in the orchard. It's no longer a karpaf. And Rava came along and he said, take away those reeds, just remove them. Why? Because Rava says that we don't have a karpaf here, with or without this little pathway that was made by Rav Huna, because once this orchard has an abarnica in it, then it's almost like the orchard is subservient, it's like secondary to the abarnica. The abarnica will now convert the entire orchard, the pardes, into a chatzer. It's like an outer courtyard for the abarnica. And therefore we don't need any tikkun at all. It makes the karpaf into a karpaf shehukaf ledira. So imagine if you live in a place, which obviously is hukaf l'dira, it's residential, you know, you do all your, whatever you do there, all your pleasures, all your tashmishim, and then you go out into a chatzar, into a courtyard. The mechitzos that surround that courtyard are called hukaf l'dira. Why? Because once you set up this abarnaka, that abarnaka is a place for dira, and you know, whatever he does there with his clothing, as we said before, with his utensils, and he rests there, and he gets shade there, and so forth and so on. Now he walks out to the orchard, and that orchard is like the chatzar of his bayis. And therefore the hekef mechitzos around this chatzar, around this orchard, is l'shem dira. So again, if you accept the following premise upon which Rava bases his conclusion, namely, that the orchard is now secondary to the abarnaka, and the abarnaka itself is hukaf l'dira, it's a small apartment, so to speak, and therefore anything around it is just a chatzah that serves the abarnaka, then the hekef mechitzos around the orchard are called hukaf l'dira. And therefore Rava says, forget about this business with Rav Huna setting up the pegs. And the Gemara actually tells us that there were two other great rabbis. One of them also had the name Rav Huna, but not Rav Huna bar Chinina, Rav Huna bar Yeshua. And they actually collected these kanim, these reeds, and they got rid of them. I don't know, they locked them up somewhere. Because they wanted to demonstrate that Rava was absolutely correct. There was no need to be matir tiltal in this orchard as a karpa, because the karpa of shehukaf l'dira. And they went as far as to be so bold and to guarantee that the original Rav Huna bar Chinina would not get wind of this, and before Shabbos he would again set up this shvil, this pathway with the reeds. They took the reeds and they locked them up in an attic somewhere. But Rava, in his leniency, in his ruling, was, and this would be understating it, very controversial. And our sugya for today, that we're about to start, Lemachar, is an entire barrage of objections against Rava. The first one is Ravina. The second one is going to be Rav Papa, and the third one is going to be Rav Huna Bray to Rabbi Yeshua. Each one is going to take his, you know, sharpen his knife, so to speak, his fencing gear, and is going to challenge Rav, each one with his own nusach, his own formulation. So let's start with Ravina. Lemachar, on Shabbos, when the Reish Galusa and all of his entourage, they wanted to go out from the house, from the mansion, and carry all their food into the Abankara, Avarnico, right? So, Esvei Ravina L'Rava. Now, again, as we'll soon see in the way the story presents itself, it's a little bit too late on Shabbos to slug up Rava, because the Reish Galusa already packed out from the mansion and he went into the Abarnaka. But let's leave that for the last part of the story here. And Ravina raises the following objection to Rav, meaning, how could you allow Tiltal to carry in this paradise, in this orchard, because of the Avarnaka, without mechitzos, without setting up those kanim that Rav Yeshua, that Rav Huna Chinina had set up? We have a braisa. The subject of this braisa that we're about to learn is Medidas Tchum Shabbos. So what happens is, you have a city, and the city is surrounded by a wall. Now, the population, or shall I say the settlement of houses, reaches a certain point, and the wall is a little bit of a distance beyond the last house. Right? So imagine, if you can, a circle, and in the middle of the circle, you know, that's where you're standing. And that circle represents the furthest house around the city. And then you have another circle, which is even greater than that one, and that's a choma, that's a wall. So there's a distance between the smaller circle and the outer circle. Now, the law of Tchum means that you go to the edge of the city, and you're allowed on Shabbos without an Erev Tchumin to walk another 2,000 Amah. And now the question is, from whence do we begin calculating that Tchum Shabbos, that 2,000 Amah? Is it from the last house, or from the Choma, or from the wall? Meaning, does the wall define the outer boundaries of the city, or is it the last part of the settled area where the houses are that defines the edge of the city, the boundary of the city? So the Braisa says the following. It depends on two types of cities. This is the tale of two cities. There's something called an Ir Chadasha, and there's something called an Ir Yeshana. If it's an Ir Chadasha, which literally means a new city, a recently settled city, is Modedin La Mishivasa. We're going to calculate the outer boundary as the Mokum Yeshiva. Yeshiva means the settlement, where the last house is, and then we're going to count from there 2,000 up. But if it's an Ir Yeshana, it's an old city, an Altishtat, is Mecho Masha, then we're going to allow a little bit more, or maybe a lot more, anyway, whatever that area is, and we're going to start calculating the end of the city from the outer boundaries of the wall. That's the second circle in my vision. Ezu hi ir chadosh v'ezu ir yeshana. Well, what is this all about? You know. So he says the following. Chadosha, and again, in the case of chadosha, we said that we start calculating from the end of the yeshiva, not the end of the kosel, the choma as he calls it. So in the case of Chadasha, hukfa ulubasof yashva. So the word Chadasha here has what I would call almost a symbolic meaning. You know, we just have to create a lexicon and define the terminology Chadasha. There are two types of cities. One city, they first set up the security before they even settle. I mean, this is not typical in our day of, let's say, Yehuda v'Shomron. You know, there are people who go out there on a hilltop, there's no security whatsoever, and they start bringing caravans. But that's a more radical kind of a political movement. But normally, what you might want to do is set up the choma first, make sure that there's an area that's circumscribed by these walls so that they have the protection against the enemies, and then start setting up your settlement and start colonizing and building houses. That's called, in the language of Chazal, Chadasha, which means that first we set up the Choma, that means the security, let's call it that, the wall around the city. And then afterwards, we settle the city. We start building buildings. In that case, the Choma in the laws of Tchumen has no significance. Why? Because it's not part of the city. Now, what Ravina is going to build castles in the sky here is, what do you mean it's not part of the city? Adarab, on the contrary, I mean, it's only because you set up this choma that you went ahead and built buildings inside the choma. What do you mean it's not part of the city? And the answer is because right now there is no city. And what Ravina wants to prove is that there's a critical moment that will determine Hekef Mechitzos. So that if you already have a city, and now after you've built the city, you structure a choma around that city, then you could say that that choma is part of the city. But if you don't have a city yet, and you build a wall around just an open area, no way, no how, can that choma be considered part of the city. So that in the case of a chadasha, where they built the choma first, we're going to have to calculate the boundaries of the city from the last house, the furthest away from the center of the town, because the choma is not considered part of the city. That's called an ir chadasha. But in the case of Yeshana, what is the definition, dictionary definition of Yeshana? She yashva ulabasof hukva, that they only put up the hekef mechitzos after the area was already colonized and the buildings were building and the houses were built. Then the choma is clearly at that moment in time being structured for the diurim, for to protect the residents. And therefore, anything within the choma is considered part of the city itself. The choma defines the outer boundaries of the city, and now we're going to calculate 2,000 amma from the choma and on. That's in the case of Yeshana. So again, Rabosa, Yeshana and Chadosh has nothing to do with, you know, the age. Like, you know what I mean? The time. You know, outside of our building here, I'm in Scholzen number 16. You'll see there's an entire engraved thing, you know, telling you when the Kablan built the building. You know, the name of the Kablan and all. You've seen it, right? That's typical in this country. So the date on that thing has nothing to do with Yeshana or Chadasha, you know, whether it's within the last 50 years or it's 150 years ago. That's irrelevant. The question is, can we consider the Choma part of the city? Only, that makes sense, only if the Choma is being structured after the city was already settled, so that the Choma now, in its structuring, in its creation, was related to and servicing the city itself. Then the choma now clinches the city, extends the boundary of the city, and we start counting 2,000 amma from the choma. And that's called Yeshana. But Chadasha is where we set up the choma first. And again, honestly, from a real estate perspective, I understand it. If I was a broker, I would rather sell you a plot of land for a house. I'm going to promise you that after you build your house, we're going to build a choma. You know, who believes the, you know what I mean? Again, I don't want to say anything against anybody, you know, but, you know, you'd rather pay an extra couple of bucks for a plot of land to build your house when you know, and you can see with your eyes, that there's already a choma. And that's called, in the language of the Chazal, that's called Chadasha. And Chadasha means that the actual moment, the critical moment of determining whether this choma is L'shem Dira or not, if there was no Dira, because they hadn't yet settled the land and built up the buildings, that choma is a separate entity now. It's not a choma of Dira. And the nafka mina is, from whence do you start calculating Tchum Shabbos, calculating the 2,000 amma? So in the case of a Chadasha, you're going to have to go to the last house. In the case of a Yeshana, which means that the building of the structuring of the wall around the city was subsequent to the settling and the building of the buildings, then that Choma becomes an integral part of the city, it's part of the Dir, and we can calculate 2,000 amma from that choma and beyond. Very nice. Well, what does that have to do with the price of eggs in China? You know, we're now talking about a sugi of Karpov, and we want to know what the status of this little of Arnica is, and so forth and so on. Hainami, the status of this orchard in which they built this Avarnica is equal to Hukva Ulabasof Yashva Dami. This is really like the case of an Ir Chadasha, which means that when they structured a wall around the orchard, at that point there was no Avarnica. So if you ask me, what is the status of that wall? Is it a hekef lidira or not? The answer is no. It's shalol hashem dira. Because all it's covering, all it's surrounding, these machitzos, is nothing more than trees and whatever else is in an orchard. But it's not lidira. Oh, now, at some point, you build an an avarnica, that's already not going to impact on the walls. We need hekef. And we have to define hekef under one or two categories, if it's hekef l'shem dira, or it's hekef shelo l'shem dira. So, Rava, you're really contradicted by this brisa with regard to Tchum Shabbos, of Medida of Tchum Shabbos. Because Rava wanted to say that once you set up the Abarnaka, you now view the Mechitzos around the Pardes as a Hekef Lidira. Why? Because now he walks out of the Abarnaka into this wonderful Pardes. It's like his chatzar, his courtyard. So that the surrounding privacy that he gets from the walls around the orchard are for the sake of his dira. Nay, we got to go back to the original critical moment when he put up the choma, and that we see from the case of an Ir Chadasha, which the hekef came first, and then the colonization came second. Hukfa l'sof ulevasof yoshva. And our case of the Avarnaka is also Hukaf Ulavasof Yoshva. You started with the Hekev, and that Hekev cannot be defined by a subsequent creation of a Avarnaka. That's Hakofa Aleph, that's Ravina, that's the first objection against Rava. And again, as we're going to see at the end of the story, after another two objections that we're going to have here, Rav Papa and Rav Huna, that it's all too late, because all these pilpulim, all these, you know, back and forth discussions took place on Shabbos. By that time, the members of the entourage of the Reish Galusa living in the mansion had already taken all the food over to the Abarnaka. But in any event, in the world of Halacha, obviously, these are very important principles. Amalei Rav Papa l'Rava. Rav Papa raises a second objection to Rava. How are you able to be matir tiltul in the paradise based on the Abarnaka and say that now it's all one big dira and it's not a karpav shelo hukaf l'dira? V'ha'amar Rav Asi. We have a statement of Rav Asi. And he's talking about Mechitzos Adrachalin. Adrachalin are what we call today Kablanim, or Banoim. You know, these are the ones who build buildings. And while they're building buildings and doing all the work, it's very hot in the sun, the burning, blazing sun. So they set up something called Mechitzos. And these Mechitzos are meant to block the sun and afford shade. And Rav Asi says, Lo Shma Mechitza. This is not called a Hekef HaOsi L'dira. Why? Because the building, the construction is a temporary kind of situation. They need a relief from the burning sun. And just by getting shade from Mechitzos, that's not called Hukaf L'dira. Alma, what do we see? Says Rav Papa, that cave under its niusa avidole, in other words, if it's just there for covering the sun, that's called sniusa, but he's not really living within this hekef, no one's living there, I mean, these are just construction workers, lo avi mechitza, that's not called asuya lidira. It's hochenami. Now too, you want to say the avarnika is considered hukaf lidira? No, that's not hukaf lidira, no one's living in the avarnika. But rather, came into tznius avida. The purpose of the abarnaka is for tznius, meaning that, you know, a person wants to, as we said, he wants to relax, so he loosens his garments, you know, a little bit, and he's got this abarnaka which has mechitzos. That's not considered that's not considered a dira. I mean, nobody's living, nobody's permanently residing in the Abarnaka. It's just a temporary kind of situation, like the construction workers. And you want to offer them a little bit of tznius on a temporary basis. Those mechitzos could not be considered as if they were hukaf l'dira, lo havi mechitza. If that be the case, if the Abarnaka is not considered a dira, then how much more so the hekef mechitzas around the pardes could not be considered hukaf l'dira. No, this Rava's logic was that the pardes now becomes secondary to the Abarnaka. And the Abarnaka has mechitzos, which is called hukaf l'dira. So we now have a makom dira, and now we can redefine the pardes as being secondary and an extension of the dira of the Abarnaka. Well, I got news for you, says Rav Papa. The Abarnaka itself is not hukaf l'dira, because that's l'tznius of the alma, meaning it's on a temporary basis, just to provide you with some little privacy during the moments that you are resting in the Abarnaka. And it's no different than the construction workers who need a certain mechitza to protect them from the sun. And those mechitzas are not called mechitzas. They're only called l'tzniusa avidale. So these mechitzos that we want to set up as a hukaf l'dira mechitza would only apply when there's an actual dira on a permanent basis, a full lifestyle, and the mechitzas are there to serve that area which is designated as a residential area. You cannot consider the Abarnaka as a residential area. And then for sure, how much more so, the hekef mechitzos around the pardes could not be considered hukaf l'dira. Next, number three. The Amar of Huna Breid Rabbi Yeshua L'Rava, third objection against Rava. How, Rava, were you... how did you have the chutzpah, so to speak, to be matted till in the parties because the Avarnaka? The Amar Rav Huna, we have another statement. Rav Huna, mechitzos hasuyos l'nachas, lo shma mechitza. Okay, now what's nachas? So I'm going to read to you the biur in the Hebrew, and then in Mitzvah Shem, the English. The biur in the Hebrew, he says that l'nachas is the same as l'shmira. Shmira means for protection. What does it mean, protection? Kishemenichim dvarim betoch hekef mechitzos. He places down his utensils or the clothes that he's wearing, and it's surrounded by mechitzos. That's called shmira. And he doesn't want anyone to walk away with his, his clothing. And he has no intention of living and residing inside the mechitzos, inside the hekev, is lo shmei mechitza. And therefore, the Abarnaka is another example of what's called a mechitza asuya l'nachas. Now, where does Rav Huna find this concept? What's the precedent for this nullification or disqualification of a mechitza asuya l'nachas? To a rabba baravua, mi arev le lekula mechoza. Now, mechoza was a very crowded area. What we call in Yiddish kep af kep, you know, one head on top of the other, so to speak. And Rabba was in charge of setting up an eruv for the entire city of Mechoza to allow tiltul within the city. And Arsiyasa are neighborhoods, and there's one neighborhood after the other. As I said before, it's a crowded urban city, Mechoza. And he decided that if there are alleyways that lead from one neighborhood to the other, we need an Erev, which is called Shitufei Muvos. And every single neighborhood, in order to allow carrying from the house into the alleyways, would require Shituf Muvos. And it's very interesting that in the organization here, the way that the engineering of Rabba Bar Avua, he wasn't misakin one sheet of muvos for the entire city, but rather he wanted to have sheet of muvos for every single neighborhood, so that within each neighborhood they would be able to be metaltel from one house into a mavui, into another house, and so forth and so on. But it wasn't enough for him to set up a single sheet of muvos for the entire city of Mechoz. And why is that? Mishum Pera Debei Tori. He says, Shocha Chafira Muka Sheminichim Bagarine Tmarim Litzorach Machal Ashvarim. So we're talking about ditches, right? Deep ditches for the purpose of feeding the oxen. That's where they kept the garine tmorim. There were the pits of dates, which apparently was food for the oxen. And these pits were in different alleyways that set up a distance between one neighborhood and the other. So every neighborhood had its own set of ditches that were very deep, and that's where they stored food for the oxen. And those ditches would separate one neighborhood from the other. And those alleyways, those mavos, would go from one end of the city to the other. And these alleyways, which had those ditches in them, would separate one neighborhood from the other. And Rabba therefore said, we cannot set up an Erev around the entire city, because the city does not have a choma, a wall around it, that would integrate all the different alleyways into one entity in one city. And even though they made mechitzos, which they set up on the edges of all these alleyways, and the purpose of these mechitzos was to protect that food that was in the ditches, and that's why they set up mechitzos. So those are called, as we said before, mechitza asuya lenachas. But we said again, asuya lenachas, we define as lishmira, for protection. So again, even though these mechitzos that separated the various alleyways between one neighborhood and the other, those mechitzos were set up, and the purpose of those mechitzos was to protect the garine tmarim, this food for the oxen, we're going to consider this as a mavui mefulash, which means that the mechitza is non-existent, so to speak. I mean, on a halachic basis. And therefore, these mevos are considered mevos mefulashos. Now, if you remember, we had long discussions in the first parak about two categories of mavui. There's a mavui mefulash and a mavui she'ena mefulash. And a mavui she'ena mefulash is a drabbanan requirement of tikkun, lechi, and kor, and so forth, because it's closed on the third side. Here you have mechitzos that lechora should close off the mavui, and therefore the mavui should be a mavui she'eino mefulash. And yet, Rabba Bar Avua defined or classified these mavos as mefulashos, completely ignoring the mechitzos. And the Gemara says, "Vaha pera debei tori." Why is this a mavui she'eino mefulash, which makes it impossible to set up an eruv around the entire city? And the answer is because mavui mefulash. I don't get it. What do you mean mavui mefulash? Vaha pera debei tori. There was a mechitza a partition that they set up at the head, at the end of each one of these mavos, and those machitzos would protect those ditches where they put the food for the oxen. And the answer has to be, it's a mechitza asuya l'nachas, don't they? Alright, so let me read to you, as I said before, this is the challenging part of Erevin. He says the following. Rav Huna says, a partition built for storage is not considered a partition. So again, he calls it storage. In the Hebrew, he calls it shmira. So we have two different translations of the word nachas. And honestly, I think there's an important difference between the two. But let's see how this plays out. So again, in the English translation, it's for storage purposes. Rabba Bar Avuah made an Erev Chatzeros for the entire city of Mechuzah, neighborhood by neighborhood, meaning not around the whole city, because of the ditches that held food for the oxen. These were deep hollows, which were to fill up with date pits that was used for animal fodder. Now, ditches containing animal fodder were located in the main streets that passed through the town. At the entrance, partitions had been constructed to protect the food stored in the ditches. Okay, and he has a long note here with a picture. Well, let's just finish the text. He says, since these partitions were used for storage, again, we had a different take on it. It's not exactly storage, but protection of the ditches. And he wants to protect the food stored in the ditches, so maybe that's what he means by storage, I don't know. And they weren't used to enclose the town for residential purposes. Therefore, these partitions, meaning these mechitzos, could not be counted on to render the entire town a single enclosure. Therefore, carrying could be permitted only within each independently enclosed neighborhood, and each consequently needed its own Erev Chatzeros. I mean, honestly, you could see that he's confused. I don't blame him. It's a very complicated piece of Gemara. Now, the partitions that were built to protect the ditches of food for the oxen were like a partition built for storage, and therefore they're not valid. Here too, the partitions around the Avangurka were made in order to protect the outerwear that people removed while they relaxed. So again, he does use the word protection, which I assume he means shmira. And once again, a mechitza that is set up for shmira is not considered a mechitza. Now, Rav Papa and Rav Huna both refuted Rava's leniency, but this all happened after the Reish Galusa and his entourage had already carried on Shabbos into the Avarnica. So let's see again in the beer, he says, Domahu lemechitza hasuya lishmar es hadvarm shemenichim besocha hekev. So the mechitza is only there for purpose of protecting that which is inside the mechitzas and encircled by the mechitzas. Sherei yasuya kidei lishmar es hagarinim shalatmarim. V'lo samach rabba baravu al mechitzas ha'elu kidei lahachshiv es kol ha'ir ki achas. On this he has a gigantic footnote. So we don't consider the entire city as one city based on these mechitzos. Ukmochein, and this now is the logic of Rav Huna, mechitza asuya l'nachas, in the case of the Avarnika, lo toya lahachshiv es hamakom shehi makifa kimukaf ledira. V'kashal rava shehechshiv es havarnikol lebeis dira. Afsha varnika mishameshes rak laniach ba talisoseim ulevusheim v'shar klei tashmisham shel ha metailim. In other words, the avarnika is there for the purpose of protecting all these different utensils and garments, and that should not be considered a machitza such that now it has a hekef l'shem dira. Now he writes, Rava lo motza tshuvos l'kushas elu. There are three attacks against Rava. Rava didn't find any counter-arguments. V'chazar bo. And he rescinded his original position, mimashe hitir, that he originally was lenient, and he allowed carrying in the paradise without any tikkun, without that entire structure of kanim, and therefore nesar a paradise betiltul. Kari alayu reishko lusa. The reishko lusa said about Rav Papa and Rav Huna Breid, Rav Yeshua, all these guys who came up on a Sunday with an objection to what happened on Saturday. It's a little bit late. You know, you missed the boat. So he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah gives a very harsh rebuke. And he says, Chachamim hema lahara ulehetiv lo yadu. They are wise men to do evil, but to do good they have no knowledge. And he's referring to the sinners of Yerushalayim at the time of the Churban HaBayis, of the first Bayis, and the Reish Galusa quoted this pasuk to deride the Amoraim who had prohibited the access to the Avarnica by removing the fence on Friday, but they only realized their error on the next day when it's too late to remedy the situation. So let me go back for a moment to Rav Huna, because I told you he has a footnote here that I wanted to read. Again, in the Hebrew version, there's a gigantic footnote. I don't know if we'll have time for that, because I do want to start the next sugya. He says, Mechoza did not have a wall surrounding it. However, the chatzeros of the city were clustered in such a way that the houses and the chatzeros formed an enclosure. So again, you have to see this diagram, but the basic idea of the diagram is that because there were so many houses and so many courtyards in the city of Mechoza, that these houses and courtyards actually can see them as a continuation of mechitzos around the city. It's as if there's a wall around the city. You know, normally when you have a row of houses, then there's that's why you pay urban planners and the government, right? There's plenty, the engineers will tell you there's plenty of room from one row to the other. But here in the case of Mechuza, let's call it bad city planning, one row was next to the other. And as a result, the facades of each one of these rows of houses would form a mechitza around the entire city. The only problem is, which Rabbah saw as an issue that had to be solved in order to set up an Erev around the city, is the mavos. Because there are large mavos from the entry of the city till the exit of the city, and these mavos were closed at both ends with mechitzos that were erected to protect the ditches of animal fodder located in them. So in effect, Mechuza was completely enclosed. And it was small enough of a town that it could qualify for one Erev Chatzeros for the entire town. So he says this is based on a sugya later on Daf Nun Tes. However, since the partitions, the mechitzos, at the edges of the town were primarily constructed for storage, they could not unite the city as one living area, and therefore each neighborhood required its own Eruv. Again, this is way, way advanced in Masechta Eruvin and beyond, And that's when we're going to get to the real issues of Erev Chatzeres for an entire city. Amar Ravi Loi, Shamati mi Ravi Eliezer. And now we're talking about a garden. And it's got mechitzos around the garden. And that's called, if it has a base of sayim, a karpaf shalo hukaf ledira. And I heard about this garden from Rabbi Eliezer, that afilu base kur, that you're allowed to carry in this garden, even if it's gigantic. It's a base kur, which means it's a place where you could actually plant a kur's worth of grains. This is a massive area. And the question is, why is this called hukaf ledira? And we discussed many times about vegetable patches and trees and so forth and so on. And here he's saying that this gina, this garden, is called a karpaf shalo hukaf ledira, and yet you're allowed to carry it. Very, very strange. He says, I heard from Rabbi Eliezer that even if the karpaf is as large as a base kur, it's permitted. So the Gemara says, Masnisin, our Mishnah that says Rabbi Loi, right? That Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Loi is quoting Rabbi Eliezer, that you're allowed to carry in this karpaf, that's a gina, even though it's lo hukaf ledira, and even if it's the size of a base kur, is the lo kechananya. This is against Chananya, and Chananya is quoted in a braisa, Chananya Omer, and apparently Chananya is to be reconciled with this Rabbi Eliezer. Maybe he's quoting Rabbi Eliezer. And we're talking about a gina shehu lo hukfa ledira. He says, afilu hi arboim sa ki istaraya shel melech. I don't know exactly what is going on here. There's some sort of major confrontation here, and it's all about Rabbi Eliezer. Let's see if we take a minute to go back to our Mishnah and see if we can get a clue from the Mishnah itself. Okay, let me just see here. Here, we're on Daf Chav Gimel Amid Aleph. We had a gigantic Mishnah. And the Mishnah says the following. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, if you have a gina, karpav she'ein bo shivim ama, plus im haisa arka yeser al rochva, so it's a rectangle, is afilu ama achas ein mitaltelin besocha. Rabbi Yossi omer afilu arka pishnayim berochva mitaltelin besocha. Omer Rabbi Loi, shamati mi Rabbi Eliezer Elazar, that gina or karpaf mutal italtel bekula kedin rishus hayochid vafilu hi kebeis kur. So it seems, from what I understand, and we didn't really shtel, we didn't sit on this Mishnah when we learned it, that according to this version, this transmission from Rabbi Loi, Rabbi Eliezer denied the whole enterprise of karpaf shelo hukaf ledira. Now he says here in the note that Kur is Shloshim Sa'a, and Hu Shavu L'Chameshesrei Mekomos Shel Shivim Amo, it's like 15 times the size of this 70 square Amo. I mean, it seems like this base Kur is massive, from what I understand. And he says, Ayin Bigmar Lahalon Chavav. So on the Mishnah, he writes a note that we should learn our sugi that we're looking here on Chavav. Shirak Bashir Ze Hite Rabbelozel Taltil Bekulo. Avol Mokom Godel Yosef Mishir Ze Af Rabbelozel Mode. Shem Ein Shom Beis Dira Osel Taltil Shom. So, Rabbosai, what we have here is the following. If I understand correctly, we have been influenced by the Chachamim, not Rabbi Lazar, to assume that once you have a Beis Asayim, then if it's Lo Hukaf Ladir, it's Asa B'Tiltel. And comes along Rabbi Lazar, no. He sets up a whole new Shir. At what point does it become a Karpaf that's Asa L'Taltel? Only if it's beyond the Beis Kur. But up to a Beis Kur, which is apparently much, much larger than a Karpaf, and a Beis Asayim. And in fact, you know, we shouldn't confuse Rabbi Lozer with Rabbi Eliezer, who's also, Rabbi Eliezer is also quoted in that same Mishnah on Chav Gimel. And he speaks about a Karpaf and a Gina, and he says it depends whether they have 70 Amma square. Now, I don't remember if we once calculated how much that is exactly, 70 Amma square. So that's something, unless you remember what we said then, I don't recall, so Belinetter will have to come back to that. So again, at what point does a Karpaf have the area that's so large that it becomes also the tilt? So if you go like Rabbi Eliezer with the Yud, Eliezer, it's 70 Amma square. If you go like Rabbi Lazar, it's the amount of base kur, which means the amount of area it would take to plant 30 saw of grains. Now the Gemara asks, from a different transmission of Rabbi Eliezer, and that is a Bryce of Hananya, who says that we're talking about just 1 second, I keep getting confused here. Sorry. All right. Anyway, we're talking about an area which is Arboim Saw. And he calls it Istraya Shel Melech. 40 Saw. So this part of our Mishnah is not in agreement with Hananya. And both Rabbi Eloy and Hananya were quoting the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. So it's funny, in our Mishnah it says Rabbi Lozer, but they have it as Rabbi Eliezer. And apparently there are two versions of Rabbi Eliezer. At what point does it become a Karpaf that's also the Tiltul? Desanya, Hananya Omer Afilu Hi Arboim Saw. Kiasratya Shel Melech, like the large palace yard of a king, and it's permitted. So according to Hananya, the permitted area of a Karpaf, which is Lo Hukaf Ladira, is 40 base saw. According to Rabbi Loi, it's only 30 base saw. Again, I'm assuming that all these shiurim are way, way beyond the shear of 70 Amma square. I hope I'm right about that. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ushneim, Rabbi Loi and Hananya, Mikra Echad Darshu. They derive the shear in which you're allowed to carry, if it's, even though it's lo hukaf l'dira, from the same pasuk. And they had two interpretations of the same pasuk. Shenemar. So this is the case where Yeshayahu and Navi comes to visit Chizkiyahu and Melech, when Chizkiyahu and Melech was ill in bed. That's when he promised him another 15 years. He says, Vayehi Yeshayahu lo yotza el chatzer atichona udvar Hashem hoya elav lemor. Meaning before Yeshayahu got an opportunity to leave the chatzer hapnimis, which is called the Rechava, and it was behind the house of Chizkiyahu, and this Rechava was lo hukaf l'dira, hoya elav dvar Hashem, and he heard the word of God. And it says ksiv ha'ir. Now I don't have the word ha'ir here. Oh, I see. Our text says chatzer. So this is what you call kriyin ksiv, right? So sometimes you read a word differently than the way it's written. So the ksiv here is ha'ir and karinin chatzer. That's really radical. And we're going to derive from this mikan le'isteraya shel melech Shehoyu Kayoros Benonios. So the Pasuk is talking about this Rechava, which is on the back of the, behind the house of Chizkiyah, and it wasn't Mukaf Ledira, and from the fact that the Pasuk calls this Rechava a Chatzer, even if it's gigantic, and the real ksiv here of the word chatzer is ha'ir, that means it's considered like a giant city, and it's einu kefes l'dira, so we're going to derive from this, as far as Shabbos is concerned, that a place that's as large as a city, if it's lo hukaf l'dira, even though it's lo hukaf l'dira, and it's so large, nevertheless it's mutal l'taltil bo. It's got the same status as a chatzer. B'mayka miflegi, so what's a machlok shin Ravi Loi and Chananya? Is mar sover koint Ravi Loi ayoros beiririos hava. These are middle-sized cities, average-sized cities, which are a base kur. And we're going to derive from this posuk that the Torah calls this a chatzer, which means it's mutal l'taltibo, even though it's not hukaf l'dira. Mar sovar arboim sa havyon. These are large cities that have the size of arboim sa. And nevertheless, even though it was lo hukaf l'dira, we're going to derive from this posuk that it's mutar b'tiltu. Okay, we almost got to the end of the sugya, but you know, I'm happy when we don't get to the end of the sugya, because then tomorrow we'll be able to give, well, I guess tomorrow means Sunday, but we'll ever give a little bit of a chazara. If you get a chance, just learn the next two lines in the Gemara, three lines in the Gemara, to finish the sugya on your own. So that I'll take this opportunity to wish you all a great Shabbos.